From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome to the Rand CRE Show. Commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Rand CRE Show. I'm your host, Mike Taravella. And today we got John Beatty. He's a commodity trader, crypto expert in my world, and a real estate investor with over 2,000 units. John, welcome to the show. How are you on this beautiful Friday?
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Look, great to be here. I'm fired up for the show. It's kind of been an exciting time in the market for the last, basically all of 2021. So
I'm excited to talk about it. And 2020 and 2019. You know, it's been a weird weekend for 2 years.
It has.
So John, what, starting off in commodities, you know, path for you, what made you get started? And then what principles that it really helped really tailor your investing experience?
Like you said, I've been for 10 years and I've spent the last 4 years in the commodity space in the oil and gas business, trading commodity sized ocean bound oil cargoes. And what comes to my mind is just number one, it's really macro understanding of how the real world works and moves things around. The volatility that exists and the unexpected things that can happen.
What?
Yes. And in fact, did you know in the real world, that happens every day and we don't necessarily hear about it, but it certainly affects our investments. And, particularly when those things happen, you have to have a plan. And if you don't have a plan at the right time, you will make the wrong mistake, because you're flying by the seat of your pants. And usually you're going to do the wrong thing at the wrong time. If you don't have a plan going into it. And that's really the value from the commodity world. Cause if I've got a ship on the water and, you know, there's a pirate situation, which has happened before, what do you do? I mean, it's just all these things have to come through your head and you have to react quickly, but you have to run in the right sequence, to mitigate your risk.
Yeah. I think that's the second time of today I've hearing about being reactionary as emotional versus having that plan going in. And I think our mentor Bill Hammond says it's all good until once you get up, but you have to land the plane eventually. So I think
that's very critical
advice of when investing. It's good when you buy it, but then minimizing that downside risk as you go through your investment.
I mean, I think everybody should be and think about their entire life as a risk manager. And I mean, and by the way, I'm pretty much a degenerate in some areas of investing, but I still have my risk management hat on so I can be a degenerate and not get totally wiped out.
I think the degenerate piece is like to, you know, extent, right? It's like the, you know, I've heard Mark Cuban put 10% in something you believe in that's may not make sense, whether it's crypto, whether it's this, yep, whether it's that. But, you know, those are the ones where you can really make your wealth is like hitting on a few of those or one of those.
Yeah, it's kind of like the X factor in some respects. I mean, OK, I could invest in the S&P 500 and just do nothing. Or I've got X, Y, and Z that I believe in. I think it's got network growth effects, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, it's really about you betting on yourself, based on your research. And if it doesn't play out, you know, having a risk management plan to either scale out, take the L, and move on, which is totally fine.
Yeah. It's a long,
but don't get blown out because you know, that's, you know, it's not three strikes and you're out. If you miss position and you get blown out, you have to start from zero, and starting from zero is a hell of a lot harder than starting from 100.
I think that's true too. Like, our investing career is so long. Like, everyone talks about like getting the first deal and the next deal and that deal. But if you take that step back, 30-year perspective, 40, 50, you know, it's a long game that you play, and putting those liars, but also not putting yourself in those risks.
Well, you. And that's actually a good segue. Cause you know, I do a lot with the equity market. I can't technically trade directly in the commodity market, but I can in the equity market big time. But that's what attracted me to real estate about 5 or 6 years ago now, was just kind of diversity of the cash flow, right? You know, it is nice to have the mailbox money show up on a regular basis and not necessarily have the mark-to-market everyday volatility of an equity class, you know, if you're in a certain property. So that's kind of been some of my diversification as I've kind of matured, is like, okay, you know, if I can just set a solid foundation of income that's coming in, I can afford to take some more risks or drawdowns in my other positions because I don't need the cash. And so not having that other need to, you know, oh, if I can't feed my family or I can't pay this bill or that bill, that's not a helpful, that's just a negative stressor and it's not helpful for anybody. So you have to have, you know, a sound mind, sound health to really focus and do your risk management and also mine for those opportunities as you go along in your career.
So would you say that real estate was a de-risking of your yes. time?
Yeah, actually, no, that's exactly right. So maybe we can talk about crypto later, but like, I feel
oh,
like-
we,
I,
Oh, we will, John.
Oh, no, I know we will, but this is going to segue perfectly into it. But I think of like lumps of money and I'm like, if I've got 10 lumps of money, I don't want to have to babysit all 10 of them at the time. That's opportunity cost. Have a good time with them, but I don't want to focus on those 10 lumps of money at all in any given time that need active management. So, you know, obviously Rand, you and Rand are familiar with the syndication model, but just effectively the passive investing model. Hey, I'm also a big passive investor because I can take a lump of money and give it to somebody that's a fiduciary of it. And I don't necessarily have to worry about it, you know, every day. I might worry about it 3 times a year and ask questions on it. But that helps me get back that opportunity cost of time because I basically go to bed at 11 every night and I'm always trying to like research and do other things. The world's constantly changing. I can't keep up with it all. And not having to worry about that lump of money is very helpful. So yeah, it's a de-risking strategy in that sense to not have to worry about that pile.
Yeah, I think that's a really good, I think a lot of people when they're starting off is like that financial freedom piece, but especially with you being a successful investor, I think people, even myself at times, like label as like, I'm a real estate investor, but they don't take that macro step back of I'm an investor because it's, that paradigm shift allows you to be like, well, because you could easily point at multifamily and say it's too hot or this is, but it's just figuring out that macro opportunistic environment that you've played in, especially investing in the last 5 to 6 years. I'm sure that's definitely helped in real estate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and look, I mean, I classify myself as an investor and yeah, I happen to be in real estate and I really like the asset class and so on and so forth. But there's going to come a day where, you know, I'm not going to do anything for like 2 years. I can see it on the horizon. I think about it and you know, there's, everybody will be FOMOing into something else. And I'll be just kind of patiently waiting. Cause at some point things get bit up too high, and stop. And I'm definitely not saying that now, but when I approach all my investments, including real estate, equities, et cetera, and in my position sizing, how much exposure do I want to a market at any given time? Do I want 100% of my net worth exposed to markets, or is it okay to have cash? Because the people that had cash in certain times in history really, really made out like a bandit. It's definitely a metric payout. And that's the time where it feels you think you're an idiot putting that money to work. March of 2020, ask any Bitcoin investor that put money in that day. They're like, this thing's going to zero. It's going to zero. It was $3,000 at the time, and now it's not $3,000. But you always feel like an idiot at the bottom.
Yeah. How do you, because this is as a real estate investor, it's always, it's the dichotomy of never have cash, but then it's always, well, you need cash to invest in the next deal. So I'm curious on how kind of either rules of thumb or things, principles that you have when it comes to kind of that concept.
Yeah. Basis points, you know, it's going back to that, the lump of money, the lumps of money. Okay. I'll pick whatever degree, lump you want to talk in, 10,000, 50,000, 100,000, just whatever increment you're comfortable with talking about. And what are the basis points of that in as far as your net worth? So, you know, position sizing will be, okay, I'll put 1% of my net worth in this. I'll put 1% of my net worth in this. That's the position sizing. And it's okay to have those spare bullets. So So in my case, I'll think and call it percentages like that. Yeah. And I'll say, okay, I have 10 bullets. Do I want to shoot them now or shoot them later? And why? And that's how I think about it. So, just divide your net worth up, your liquid net worth up and say, okay, well, this is how many bullets I have. Do I want to shoot them all at once at the same thing? Probably not.
Not ideally.
But, and I also say, it's kind of nice to have like at least 10 or 20% cash around at all times, because with in any given 6 month span, something's happening and there's some opportunity. I don't tell you what it is or what it will be, but in my experience, there's a huge volatility event or something that happens that you might want to be positioned for and act very quickly.
Yeah, no, that's a good rule of thumb, which I think kind of transitioned of what was the bullet or what was the triggering event to make sure you had a shot at cryptocurrency, because you are the man, the myth, the legend when it comes to the crypto within our network, and you're just a mindful of wealth and appreciate all of your sage wisdom on it. Obviously, you're not giving advice on everything. I know about
everything I know about crypto, I learned on Twitter. I mean, that's kind of my expertise.
I'm back on Twitter. I'm back on Twitter because the VC and crypto market is literally just Twitter.
No, it is. And listen, this is no offense to older generation, but I've had a lot of conversations with boomers in that demographic, and I told them the other day straight up, and I was like, listen, I was like, Google is an old man machine now. You can't find any good information on Google anymore. It's on Twitter. It happens too fast. I just went to a website today, not even listed on Google, and it's about to launch. It's cryptocurrency related, but it's not on Google. It's only on Twitter. And like, if you're not in the Discords or the Twitter scene, like the world is zooming by you at 100 miles an hour. And by the time you find out about it on Google, you're late. You're the exit liquidity.
You're the technological boomer.
So my advice is, hey, if you're older, don't feel comfortable with all the technology, just embrace it. Find a 12-year-old or whatever, and just like see what they're doing. Don't copy them. Just see what they're doing. Wait, what are your friends talking? Get involved. Yeah. I bought an NFT this morning at 4 a.m. and it was a Campbell's Soup knockoff. And, that's a 10-to-1 return this morning. That's why I got up early. But I wouldn't have known about it had it not happened on Twitter like 4 hours before. Anyways, long story short, thank you for the intro, but I'm just, this is like a mindset shift. Information flow is coming at you way fast now. The market evolves so much faster just because the access of information, speed of information, there's a lot of AI out there that can just crunch data and feed it to you as fast as possible. So don't wait, get out there yourself and try to get after it, which brings me back to the crypto story. I'll start from last year.
Oh, John, so, go deep and wherever you want.
I will go deep and I'm excited for this. And I kind of get fired up about this. I don't know why it's exciting. Yeah. I invested in Ethereum in 2017 at $300.
It's not $300 right now.
It's not $300. It's 10 times higher right now. But that was basically the peak in 2017. And I caught the absolute tail end of it. And I had to liquidate my position for a flat. I was basically break even on the trade.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't actually buying the crypto. I was, it was an exchange traded fund through some Danish exchange. It was super
back shady. When Coinbase was not a thing.
Well, Coinbase was a thing, but I wanted quick equity exposure. So I was trying to find any like instrument in that traded in the world.
Yeah.
And I found this Danish ETF, but like 30 days later, they're like, you must close this account or it'll be closed for you because of blah, blah, blah regulations. So that was pretty much the end of 2017. And I didn't look at it until 2020. But this is when you have to have your macro head on. Okay, so number one, deflation happened in the first quarter of 2020. I think we can all agree with that. Everything, that's when correlations go to one and everything just falls. And the only safe haven is the U.S. dollar. U.S. dollar went to, 99 to 100 on the index. So that was the safe. And then what proceeded to happen was mega stimulus. And you can see this coming from a mile away. It was hard for everybody to see it, but I mean, the numbers were written. And so it really set up the reflation trade of the decade, maybe of the century, from third quarter 2020 into this year. And think about it, okay, you had ultra monetary. I mean, it's obvious looking back, but when you're in the thick and thin of it, you need somebody, you need to have some, you can't rely on your gut. You've got to have some. And I personally rely on a service called hedgeye.com. Keith McCullough does a great job, but they're basically macroeconomists first. So they have everything divided up in four quads. So inflation, deflation, Goldilocks, and stagflation. And so these guys are ringing the bell. They're like, this is going to be total reflation. Get long commodities, get long risk. Basically don't be long the treasury and the dollar was basically the trade. So if you did that, you knocked it out of the park. And so with that thesis, I said, okay, well, this is probably my time to get back into the crypto. I didn't buy the March 2020 lows, but can buy the $9,000 Bitcoin in October or whatever. And so that was my thesis. I was like, okay, I've got a reflation trade. I've got crypto. I see the adoption numbers coming. So I believe there's just a secular growth story in this in general. Kind of like, you know, buying Apple in 2006, there was just secular growth. So even if the economy was sideways, their user count was growing. So similar thesis. And so that I said, okay, crypto is going to be my investment vehicle. And that's when I went down the rabbit hole. So Bitcoin's a gateway drug, friends.
And the wealth creation. You heard it here first.
And then all of a sudden, I had a 7% allocation to crypto at that point. And then it grew to like not 7%. And then I was like, oh man, this is a lot. I need to like, how do I de-risk this?
And I feel like we've all been on Coinbase, just like, all right, it went down 5%, so I'm putting it down, and then it'll go up 10%. Just ride the wave.
That's exactly right. So I've learned a lot, and I did not play this perfectly, but I didn't go through the entire drawdown from $64,000 to $28,900 recently, but I did wear 50% of it because I was like, okay, some of this is just long term. I'm going to hodl some of this. So I tried to risk management, but I still took a nasty drawdown. I think my drawdown was like net portfolio 55-60%. I mean, because I was long a lot of like things that have a high beta correlation to Bitcoin, but that wasn't bad. So I survived.
That's
so
if you survive today, 60% right?
Drawdown, you're pretty much good in this space. But this comes, this is back in the position sizing thing. I learned that lesson. I said, okay, never again. What do I really believe in besides the, in general, hey, I like crypto. What are the growth stories, the secular growth stories within crypto? And so that's when I started digging deep. That's why you got to be on Twitter and, you know, don't follow the big accounts. The best accounts out there have like 400 followers and they say something every like 7 weeks, but it's like pure alpha. So if you're a hedge fund, like if I were running my own hedge fund right now, I'd basically just have an intern with 10 monitors, just mining Twitter and about 10 different Discords. That's where the real information's at. It's not on Google.
Yeah. With so to kind of go into the crypto piece, Hedge AI was like, go long.
Yeah. Hedge AI didn't say go long crypto, but I said, if I'm going to go long reflation, I'm going to go long secular growth, and I'm going to do it in the crypto space because I think there's something there. And so it'll provide, it's kind of like trading with leverage effectively.
Yeah.
So I said, it's the best time to take that bet was in October of 2020. And lo and behold, you know, it just ripped its face off. And I bought Doge at like, gosh, this would be worth millions of dollars. I had like 5 million Doge or something like that at one point. And that was not
a lot. You keep saying it with the tone of like you're an addict and like you're just like Gambler's Anonymous.
No, it is. I mean, it's absolutely an addiction. And you've got to realize, and I keep saying this myself in my back. I was like, you're not smart. The market's just bull.
Yeah.
You're not smart. The market's just bull. And you got to realize that. And so that's kind of been my mantra. It's nothing I'm smart or quick on. It's just you're in a bull market and, you know, here it goes. But some things just exceeded expectations. I doubled my money on Doge, but I could have, I don't know. I don't even know what the multiple is now. It's crazy. But I've had a few. I mean, I've had a 5X. I've had a 20X. I mean, there's been some rivers for sure. But at the end of the day, you got to, you got to talk yourself back off the cliff. I mean, I just moved over a lump of money back into my bank account from Coinbase to go invest in real estate. Because at the end of the day, this is still risky AF, kids. And you've got to de-risk yourself at some point. And you better do it sooner than later, because you know it's all nice when everything's going up and there's an infinite bid, but there will not be an infinite bid one day. And because there's so many new products out there, it really disperses liquidity. So like, you're going to lose the bids on a lot of stuff. Like, you think the NFT craze is crazy? People are going, you know, doing 100-to-1 in one day. That's fine. But my gosh, when that floor comes out, there's just going to be no bids. It's going to be an insta drop. It's going to hurt. And so if you need that liquidity, good luck finding it.
Yeah.
That comes back down to like position sizing. That's why I'm like funneling all this stuff back into real estate. Cause I know that's kind of the steady paycheck at the end of the day.
Yeah. I relate to that. Obviously I wasn't as bullish cause I wasn't as informed, but still have a crypto balance that I'm probably like, I'm too bullish on, but I'm just like, hey, I'm okay with it because I just believe in the long-term piece of it. Like, I didn't like lose or anything, but I think I was buying so far back. But I think too, I think the mantra of like, if you keep gambling, the house will always win.
The house will always nail you. There's no doubt about it. I mean, and I'll give you a story here. We were in White Plains at Marco's event, kind of visiting them. Anyways, that night, for whatever reason, I was like, I'm going to take some profits on this thing. And then I immediately, because the market like had a quick dip. And then all of a sudden I was like, why did I sell this? It was just there. My phone was in my hand and I just felt obligated. And that's the addiction. And that's why having a phone on you and all these trading apps is absolutely terrible for you. If you're an investor and you have a time horizon of 2 or 3 years, get it out of your hands. That's the action plan where it takes, you know, an hour to figure out how to actually get it back. And then your monkey brain will have like calmed down by then. But I was just in my bed and I hit the button and I immediately knew that I screwed up. And I bought back in $10 higher, and $10 higher at that time was like 15%. Now, fast forward, that is now 1.5 times higher. And that was like 10 days ago, 20 days ago, however long. But point is, if you have conviction, have a time horizon set, and for God's sake, don't trade. Trading, I mean, listen, especially if you have a job, you shouldn't trade, period. Here's my advice to everybody right now. Don't do it. I've done it. And I'm probably net lost Satoshis or Bitcoin net. And you know, I think I'm a reasonably smart guy, but man, if you're not on it all the time, it's another job. It's another opportunity time waste. So have some conviction, have some ups that are set on certain things, right? To keep you stopped out of a position.
Rounded.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, if you're bullish on Chainlink, if you bought in at 20 and it goes to 13, doesn't matter. That's not the time horizon you're looking at. Crypto operates on a logarithmic chart. Look at the growth rates. I mean, that's kind of what I follow is Metcalf value, which follows user count and transaction count. You know, is it growing? Is it accelerating? You know, basically, you know, Link growth and Ethereum growth is growing as fast or faster than internet in 1997 right now.
It's funny you say that, because I literally explained it to like my parents. I'm like, it's like buying real estate in the internet in the late 90s.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you don't want to wind up in a WorldCom situation either. But but yeah, no, that's exactly what's right. So that's the secular growth story. So honestly, if you're looking at it, if you're charting this stuff, chart it on a log growth scale.
Yeah.
The normal price scale is going to scare you out. Cause if you're familiar with the equity market and something goes up a dollar one day and you're super happy. I mean, this is like trading volatility of volatility. It's all over the road, and you will make dumb decisions. I guarantee you, you will sell bottoms and buy tops all the time if you rely on your monkey brain. So don't do it. So don't trade. I think the only successful people out there is probably 2% of the population. You're probably not one of them. Just know your strengths. You can, your time spent better elsewhere. So right now I am focused on the infrastructure plays and crypto. That's kind of where my space and niche is right now.
Yeah, I just want to take a step back too, because I think it kind of explains a lot of your trading trends, right? Is that time horizon piece. Everyone in the crypto is get rich tomorrow.
Yeah.
But the true wealth creations is like 2, 3, 5, 10 years, 30 years, right? That's where you hold it forever. And that's when the true wealth is. But to do that, to like devil's advocate, even when you're doing your NFT trading, that's not your primary source of income. That's your fun money. You're doing it, and the time horizon is much smaller.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, this is, again, don't be a degenerate. It's easy to get caught up in the madness of crowds. And this, we've kind of experienced that this whole year, and NFT craze has really been big. And actually I believe strongly in NFTs, but there's going to be a day where supply saturates demand in a big way. And you're going to be sad on all the garbage that you bought and you can't get rid of.
And a picture of a rock just sold for 400 Ethereum this week.
That's right.
So it's all relative.
Yes, it absolutely is. Well, I mean, but it's a serious market now. So, you know, the good art, you know, not the trash, but the good art, the generative AI stuff, the Fidenzas of the world, that's going to have a place for sure in history. I mean, that's going to be 400, 500 ETH floors in the future. So some of that stuff I'm good with. But again, time horizon. You can look at some of this art and you're like, this has got staying power. Or, and some of this is like, you know, you bought a picture of a monkey.
It's that's another one. I'm like, it reminds me of Supreme 3-5 years ago and Bape and all this other stuff. And you're like, now where's that? I mean, it's still up there, but it's not in the grand scheme anything close to the valuations of like Ethereum and stuff like that. So,
yep.
So looking at the NFTs, what is there? Is there anything? Because I saw your message in our group, and then I was like, what is? And I was just going through all the stuff, kind of like, well, what makes this? And I see like minting and stuff like that. So when like kind of high level looking at NFTs, what draws your eye in the market to like a total boomer, if you will, or a newbie?
Okay. So if you can mint stuff for cheap, I mean, I'm talking like,
what is
minting?
The first purchase.
Yeah, you're the first person that mints some of this stuff. You're in good shape. Like that's probably the floor. It's probably not going below that. But it's really hard to get on the stuff because usually things are minted within about 1 hour. And that's probably slow. The can of soup, the Andy Warhol knockoff that I bought.
How did you know? I already know the answer is definitely going to be Twitter, but. How is the
yeah that that's you that's knew the answer.
Of Twitter is like 4 a.m.
I'm in some discords and okay. Some of the guys are just like they're only people in there that focus only on NFT trading. People are market making OpenSea. Do you have market makers like for all the art block stuff?
Yeah,
that like people are making a market like they would make a market for, you know, any other cryptocurrency or equity market. They're making markets for some of these things, for the especially the big stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I mean, in general, if you're interested, art blocks, all that stuff has been super bid up, but that stuff's got staying power. Avid Lines, Fidenza, Avid Lines, Nemesis Blocks. Those are some of the names of, you know, generative art. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And the reason I bought that can of soup this morning was because if I was the Andy Warhol can of soup holder, I get access to the, PA Mondrian's work. They're doing an NFT launch of that. So that's the guy with all the paint blotch kind of.
Oh, so that's kind of your entry drug.
Exactly right. So these guys have actually a roadmap. So if you buy the can of soup, you get a free drop on this next one that's coming in September. And then there's actually another drop that's coming in October. So like it was kind of like my entry fee to get what I believe is it's going to be some valuable art.
The golden ticket for another two drops,
but all that stuff's found on Discord. Like I literally, if I could quit my full-time job and just spend all my time mining for alpha on these sources. Like, that's what I would do if somebody was like, hey, you want to start a business? I'd be like, yep, let's go. I need 10 monitors and we're going to monitor the stuff 24/7 and probably have TAs do this. Like, that's how detailed you got to get. But that's what shops are doing right now for sure.
Yeah. The rabbit hole I got on was because I've heard of Cyberpunks. That was like the newest one. And then I saw the minting and I saw some haven't been minted. So in theory, it's because I'm sure it's a combination of art of like it's a form of rarity.
Yeah. CryptoPunks were from 2017.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's going to be minted in 2021 that 4 years from now, people are going to be like, oh, that was back in the day. That was NFT summer. That's going to be more valuable. So there's few protocols or, you know, art things that happen in 2017 that people really value. It's usually the things that are from 2017 and there's only 100 of or 1,000 of. Those are the ones that are valuable. And then today's NFT craze has been on the more attractive art. I mean, there's a lot of avatar pictures out there, but the Fidenzas, the Avid Lines, the auto-generated, like really nice, beautiful artwork. That's what's hot in 2021. And that stuff 3 years from now is going to be, people are going to remember, oh yeah, 2021 was DeFi summer or NFT summer.
It's just funny because how you're saying it is like an art or a wine connoisseur who just knows like everything about it. So it's just very interesting in that aspect of like figuring out this realm. It's so mind blowing, and I'm definitely going to reach out to you after this podcast and just kind of,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've got my fingers in a lot of different pies, but again, I'm trying to de-risk some of it. I'm in de-risk mode from now until the end of the year. And, I'm going to take advantage of some opportunity, federal opportunity zones, real estate zones to roll some of these short-term capital gains into.
From Doge to opportunity zones.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, it's a pretty good deal. I can defer my short-term capital gains until December 31st, 2026.
Yeah.
So that's rather not pay those taxes right now. I'd rather pay them in 2026.
I think, once again, time horizons, right? Playing the short-term game to put into long-term assets that will cash flow, tax benefits, depreciation. Anything? Did I get it all, John?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, listen, man, big warning here. Everybody's hot to trot on crypto, but you're not getting rich overnight. Just get it out of your mind. I mean, some people do, but it's not.
You will get gut punched.
You will lose. You bad. Will lose it. Trust me, you will lose it. So you got to de-risk yourself along the way.
Yeah. So John, if anyone had to get into like the crypto or kind of just so Twitter, Discord, any other resource that you think would help them in either crypto.
what a crazy non-traditional answer, because I feel kind of so old in this space.
I'm going to wait for like Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Yeah. You definitely can't wait for books to come out on this, but yeah, it's Twitter and Discords, and like, you just have to feel your way around the multiverse, I guess. And you know, there's a lot of trash out there and you've got to sift through it.
Yeah.
This is kind of, you know, there's no institutions that are covering this. It's hilarious. Like,
hey, John Beatty Yu is going to be one. All right. Beatty coin.
I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, I am absolutely I'm in favor of supporting the infrastructure around cryptocurrency. So Bitcoin mining, in fact, I just bought some miners the other day. I want to start that at scale. And so we're talking to a group of folks that are knowledgeable in this space, and we've got some kind of proprietary technology we're going to put on it. I'm interested in decentralized cloud computing and offering that spare compute at scale into the crypto space to support validators and all that good stuff. So yeah, when it comes to infrastructure, like, that's what I'm really interested in participating in the build out. So when you participate in infrastructure, you don't necessarily get 100 exposed to the token price as much, because you get a return on that capital assets that you're providing. So that's kind of a whole new growing asset space. And I'd absolutely love to roll some stuff up with some investors soon on that, because I believe there's opportunity in the space as it continues to grow. So, you know, we're at about a $2 trillion market cap right now. I mean, I can see crypto topping out at 10 trillion. This is kind of 4 years down the road, but the space is going to grow. I don't think there's stopping it, and certainly not regulations stopping it. In fact, we've got more regulation coming from Mr. Gensler, and people have effectively acknowledged that regulation's coming, and that it's absolutely good for the space.
Because I think it's just the last thing you want is crypto to continue to be the wild, wild west and just have that.
Yeah, no, you want regs to come. You want big institutions to come. Obviously, people put.
We want to just ask, what is your one investor pro tip to the listeners out there besides get a Twitter, Discord, and take over the world?
Yeah, I mean, it's simple. You have to have discipline. And I am by no means perfect, but you've got to have a process around what you do, and you've got to have predefined buckets so you can't get over your skis and get hurt. Because if you take a 50% drawdown on 100% of your net worth, that takes a long time to come back up to the top to all-time highs.
Yeah.
You cannot afford that, especially if you have material net worth. So like, be careful. That yeah. You're a risk manager first, and if something's going against you, cut it. I mean, I've cut a lot of things and they hurt, but man, when you look back 3 weeks later and you're like, man, I'm glad I cut that because it's down another 50%. So you got to have some discipline about in this space. And then secondly, I know you didn't ask for the second tip, but
it's always welcomed.
You know, you got to get used to buying blood. If it's something you believe in, buy the blood. You want to buy red. You want to buy red days when everybody's really negative. It's such a more asymmetric risk reward ratio than chasing green candles. Easy to chase a green candle. Everybody does it. And then all of a sudden you're like, you buy it and then you're like top immediately because you were the last person. And that's how it always works.
And that takes so much time to like develop that skill. Cause even like with COVID, I was like, I bought like one share of Google and I was like, and now it's doubled. Like it's only one share, but I was like, is Google going away?
Absolutely. It's absolutely hard to do. It's absolutely hard to do. I don't disagree with you. So you've got to build your own conviction too. I mean, no matter who you read on Twitter or whatever, that's no good. I mean, it's fine. There's alpha in there, but if you put five different Twitter sources together and that's like your macro thesis, that's no bueno.
Yeah.
Like that's not repeatable. And if it's not repeatable, there's no success.
Yeah.
So I would recommend, and this is an actionable tip, go to hedgeye.com. I'm not affiliated at all, but I just like their they have a process and they've got an allocation process of, hey, we're in this macroeconomic environment. We're going to allocate, you know, X percent to equities. We're going to X percent to small caps, X percent to whatever. And there is a process and it's very helpful to build some discipline. They don't hold your hand, but they give you kind of the process and walk you through it kind of every day. So that's been very helpful and instrumental for me because I started that in 2020.
Yeah, no, it's huge. And it reminds me of Ray Dalio of have the mental, as you do that process over and over again, you're having the same mental maps of, I've been in commercial real estate for 2 years and it's like, oh, this is this deal. And that's why
that's right.
Buy it.
Yeah, this goes back to Charlie Munger. Charlie Munger's like got 110 like mental models that he pulls from to simplify his kind of investment decisions or what have you. It's the same thing. You've got to build those mental models and you've got to build the conviction in your mind first around those so you can actually execute them, because one day it's going to get really bloody and you still got to, you know, turn the cranks, so to speak, on that mental model and execute.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, John, thank you so much for being on the podcast. We're definitely going to continue this probably quarterly.
Absolutely,
baby,
man.
The baby updates.
Fired up.
And if anyone has questions or want to reach out to you, what's the best way they can get a hold of you?
It's easy. I mean, call me. 615-310-1633. I mean, it's not a big deal. I like talking to people. So awesome. Just call me 615-310-1633, or you can email me at john@blueoakinvests.com.
Awesome.
And that's it.
Well, awesome. Well,
or you can follow me on Twitter at John Beatty. That's my Twitter handle.
And that's where you find the real
gold. Yeah, I do stuff I like. So, you know, for what that's worth.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate
I've got all of 28 followers.
Hey, 29 in a minute. So I got you, John. So, but thank you so much, John. And if anyone has any questions for me, MikeT@RanSiri.com. But I'm telling you, John's the guy to go to. So thank you so much, John. And until then,
thanks, bro.
Next week.
Been a pleasure.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.